This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Richard Conlon, president of the Seattle City Council and chair of the council's Regional Development and Sustainability Committee. Richard Conlon is here today to give us an update on the Local Food Action Initiative and tell us about the Seattle Farm Bill principles, which were adopted by the City Council in May as policy guidance to the federal government in the renewal of the 2012 Farm Bill. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
The Seattle Farm Bill principles are part of the City of Seattle's Local Food Action Initiative. Would you remind us of what the Local Food Action Initiative is trying to accomplish?
Well, the goal of the Local Food Action Initiative is really to transform our food system so that we can actually have more reliance on local food, reduce our carbon impact, provide better and healthier diets for the people of Seattle. It's got many, many different components to it, including encouraging more food grown in Seattle and supporting our farmers and farmers markets, things of that nature, as well as doing economic work to try and build a regional food economy.
Before we focus on the Seattle Farm Bill principles, perhaps you could give us some background on the Farm Bill. What programs are included in the Farm Bill? There are quite a few.
It's actually very huge. The Farm Bill has about 18 titles, and only about a third of those titles actually relate to the farms. Much of the rest has to do with things like food stamps and other urban programs relating to food. There's a whole bunch of different community development type initiatives that are part of it. That's why we argue it really should be called the Food Bill, not the Farm Bill.
What was the reason for creating a set of Seattle Farm Bill principles? What's the goal?
Well, when we started looking at our local food system, we know that there's a lot of stuff that we can do here locally. But we realized that a lot of the patterns of our food system are set at the national level. And sort of the principal challenge that we have at the national level is that there is an excessive subsidy for many of the foods that are not particularly healthy, and there's very little or no subsidy for foods that are healthy, and so it distorts the market. And we think there's a way in which to work with farmers and help them to grow the kinds of healthy foods that people are looking for rather than the kinds of unhealthy food that the Farm Bill encourages. So we recognize that we don't have control over the Farm Bill. It's federal legislation, but cities traditionally do lobby the federal government on issues that are of importance to them, and this is one that we think needs to be designated as important, even though we haven't played much of a role in it in the past.
Who was involved in developing the Seattle Farm Bill principles?
Well, we had a team of people that included representatives from the academic community, the environmental community, farmers both from Western and Eastern Washington, and other folks who are involved in the food system. And they collectively put their heads together and came up with a set of principles, which were then distributed more widely to groups around the community for input. And after collecting that input, we then came up with this concise list of principles.
Would you give now an overview of the Seattle Farm Bill principles? Which principles were agreed upon?
Well, we agreed on six principles that were the important ones for the Farm Bill to include. The first one is that the food system should be health-centered. It should be organized around food that is healthy for people. The second principle is sustainable agriculture practices. We need to make sure that our farms and our soils are protected and enhanced so that we can have food for the future. The third was community and regional prosperity and resilience, meaning that food is part of the way in which rural communities and urban communities operate. There's lots of jobs involved in many different ways in distributing and getting it out to people. And we want to make sure that the Farm Bill emphasizes that community prosperity. The fourth is equitable access to healthy food. Right now, we have this obesity epidemic in our society, and it affects most intensely poor people, who ironically are also at risk of hunger. So poor nutrition and hunger, they're two sides of the same coin. And our fourth principle is to make sure that healthy food is available to everybody. The fifth principle is social justice and equity, and that kind of draws in all of these things to say all of this should be built around a framework in which everybody in the society benefits. And the sixth principle is a systems approach to policymaking. Instead of just saying, well, we'll do this program over here and that program over there and that program somewhere else, let's talk about the whole thing as a system, because it really is an ecosystem, the way food is developed and grown and then transported and processed and then sold and marketed. And then leftovers are disposed of. All that is a system, and we need to have that kind of systems approach to policymaking.
Would you go into more detail about what a health-centered food system would entail?
Well, a health-centered food system would basically be looking at agriculturally sound agriculture that promotes public health. And we're looking at food that promotes health, which would basically be fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, legumes, dairy, and lean protein. And that's the kind of things that we should be emphasizing in our food system. Instead, our food system most heavily subsidizes corn, which can be a great part of a diet, but should not be the prime part of a diet, and a number of other things that perhaps are not as healthy as the way in which people really would most benefit from.
What are some of the specifics as to how social justice and equity can be addressed in the Farm Bill?
Well, there are people in the U.S. as well as abroad who are involved in the farm system who are not treated fairly. And that includes farm workers, people in local communities who are involved in food processing and distribution, the folks who are working in restaurants and things of that nature. And we want to make sure that those people are included and referenced as part of the system, because they, in fact, are the ones that are at the bottom and often are not making very much money, and they're doing a lot of the hard work that actually make this food system possible. So our food system really ought to make sure that those people are included and that farm workers, for example, get decent living conditions and just wages. That's something that we can do in this country, and we also have influence over other countries as well and the farm products that we get from other countries, and we ought to be using that influence both socially and governmentally as much as possible to help people.
What would be a specific example of a systems approach to policymaking? You made some general comments about that, but could you go into more detail?
Well, the systems approach would maybe suggest that you take a look at what is the purpose of a particular program? How does it fit into what it is that we're doing? So, for example, if you were going to look at the purpose of subsidizing commodity crops, right now that purpose seems to be primarily in order to support particular farmers and give them money so that they can stay in business, which is not a bad thing. But if you start looking at it in the long term and say, so how does this fit into the whole system? What does that do to nutrition? What does that do to soil conservation? What does it do to the health of the people who are eating that food? How does it fit into the local economy where farmers may be sending their food to local storage and processing facilities, and then that goes from there into the cities where people will be consuming that food? So instead of just looking at that policy and say, oh, farmers need help, so let's just do this, look at it in terms of the whole context and say, so if farmers need assistance, let's do it in a way that actually makes sense for the whole system, not just targeted at that one specific element.
Would you also say more about equitable access to healthy food?
Well, in Seattle, we know that there's about probably a tenth of our population who have difficulties in getting food. That's pretty significant. That's 50 or 60,000 people who have challenges in making sure that they actually have a meal the next day. We also have up to 20% of our people who are obese and 50% who are overweight. That's hundreds of thousands of people just in the city of Seattle, and actually we're in better condition than most places around the country. So when we talk about equitable access, we're talking about making sure that not only do people who are middle class have access to good, organic, healthy food, but that we find ways in which to make sure that that extends to people who don't have the kind of incomes that allow them to have variety in their diet relatively easily. And of course, in our current society, even the middle class can be challenged in doing that. And when people have to set priorities between paying their mortgage and buying healthy food, they may dial down on the food and buy things that are not necessarily the best for them in terms of their overall nutrition. So we want to make sure that everybody has access. And the way to do that is to really shape the system in a responsible way so that those foods that are healthy can get to consumers in a relatively inexpensive fashion compared to what some of them are today. Sometimes there's lots of healthy food that's available, but some of it is relatively higher price compared to cheap food. And that's a distortion of the system, because in the long run, the costs are going to be borne by all of us.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Richard Conlon, president of the Seattle City Council. Our topic is the Seattle Farm Bill Principles and the Local Food Action Initiative. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you also say a bit more about the community and regional prosperity and resilience principle?
When we talk to farmers, one of the things that we hear from them most often is that what's missing in the current system are the small-scale and medium-sized processing and transportation and distribution facilities that they used to have. So right now, the system is really oriented around large farms, large transportation systems, large-scale warehousing and processing. And so small farmers in particular and local farmers don't necessarily have access in the way that would be optimum for them. And what that means is that we lose those jobs. If you go out to rural communities and the rural towns that are in those communities, people are unemployed there. You see vacant storefronts and vacant buildings because a lot of that small-scale economic activity has really been lost. And a lot of it has been lost because not of the market, but because of the way in which our federal subsidies are designed and developed. And we would like to reverse that and bring economic prosperity back to people in those small communities, as well as in places like Seattle, where the food and beverage industry employs tens of thousands of people. And yet there's many more opportunities for us to do that. Right now, we tend to have people employed primarily in the distribution of that food, in the grocery stores and the restaurants. We don't have as much involved in the processing. And if we can get more small-scale and medium-scale processing facilities in Seattle, that can create more thousands of good jobs, and it can support the local farmers most effectively. You know, let me give you an example of one thing that I was told about. There's a particular commodity, I can't remember which one it is actually, but it's grown in the Puget Sound area and then shipped to California for processing and then shipped back here to be sold, where it's sold as local. And it's kind of interesting to think about that because it sort of is local, it's locally grown, but between being grown and being sold in the stores, it's shipped to California and processed and then brought back here.
Who in Seattle is supporting the Farm Bill principles?
We have a wide array of organizations, ranging from environmental organizations, labor organizations, businesses, farmers, and people from around the community who have endorsed this. And if you go to our website, seattlefarmbillprinciples.org, you can see a list of the people who have endorsed it. We're circulating it as much as possible. This is the beginning of a campaign. The Farm Bill won't even be considered until 2012. So we're just starting to inform people and get them organized and get them aware of the fact that this is an important issue for cities. And as we've developed the Seattle principles, then we're taking them out to other cities around the country. And the goal is to build an urban coalition around what the Farm Bill actually could do for our health, our nutrition, and our economy. And the urban coalition, we hope, is going to play a very significant role in what happens with the Farm Bill in 2012. Or given the way Congress operates, it may be 2013 before they get around to it. But it definitely is something that's going to happen.
To what extent have you gotten a response from other parts of the country so far?
We have had lots of interest and inquiries from other cities around the country, and I know several cities are considering adopting similar resolutions. And I sit on the Energy, Environment, and Natural Resources Committee of the National League of Cities. And the National League of Cities represents about 1,800 cities around the country, from the very small to the very large. And we develop national policy that will help urban areas. So the committee that I sit on is responsible for overseeing things like this kind of issue and then presenting that to the National League of Cities for policy consideration. At our meeting in June, the committee agreed that we would adopt a resolution modeled on the Seattle Farm Bill principles, and we would ask the National League of Cities to endorse that at our November convention. That resolution has now been drafted. The next meeting of the committee will be in early September, and I expect that the committee will adopt the resolution and then present it in November at the National Convention. And my hope is that the National Convention will adopt it, and then that will be the official policy position of the organization that represents America's cities.
Have you yet gotten a response from politicians in Washington, D.C. on this issue?
We have gotten a little bit of interest. We know actually the Obama administration is very interested in this because the kind of things that we're talking about are very similar to the types of health and nutrition and food programs that the administration has been advocating for, and they've been very supportive of the kind of efforts we're doing. And we know that many of our local representatives are interested and committed and concerned on this. Exactly how we can translate that into what we're hoping to build in Congress as a coalition is going to be an interesting challenge. But one of the great advantages of this whole work is that it gives us an opportunity to reach out across ideological grounds and across the political differences. The subsidies that are incorporated in the Farm Bill are the very kind of things that it seems to me should be anathema to the conservative philosophy. Just giving money to people for the purpose of distorting the economic system in a way that's not good for people doesn't seem like it's consistent with conservative philosophy. So it feels to me like we have some opportunities to reach across boundaries there and perhaps build a different kind of a coalition and maybe keep this out, we can always hope, keep this out of the sort of ideological wars that have tended to make it difficult to get things done in D.C.
To what extent do you think the current discussion about debt at the national level is likely to affect what you can do with a farm bill?
Well, it's an interesting problem. The question in my mind is going to be, can you get Congress to focus on issues that are important that are not at that critical level? And it's kind of twofold. I mean, on the one hand, everybody is focused on what appears to be an ideological gulf between the leadership of the House and the rest of the country. And that's a problem, obviously. But on the other hand, the other focus that we hope people will eventually get back to is realizing that our economy is still quite fragile. And if we're thinking about our economy and finding ways in which to truly restore its health, it seems to me that this is the kind of program that actually will make a difference. And we know that under the stimulus program, there have been a number of grants given. Seattle and King County have received a number of grants to help develop further local food systems and healthier food systems. And we're seeing results. We're seeing that new organizations and new entities and new businesses being stimulated as a result of those kinds of developments and better policies being implemented by local governments in order to get better food in people's hands. So we do think that there's an economic benefit from doing this kind of work. And if people can kind of focus on that, that would be really helpful.
What is your specific strategy to try to get the Seattle Farm Bill principles actually incorporated? Will you lobby people in D.C., or what do you plan to actually do?
Well, our first step is to get the National League of Cities to endorse the principles and adopt them. And when we say endorse these principles, we don't mean it has to be word for word what we're saying, but basically the concepts that we're looking at. And we're well on track to doing that. Then we move from there to try and build a coalition that includes not only the cities, but we'll work with the county organizations and with many other organizations that are involved and engaged in this. Again, it's something that cuts across a lot of lines. People who are concerned about human services, people who are concerned about economic development, rural development, labor unions, environmental organizations. There's really a strong base that can potentially be built here. So that coalition, we're not necessarily even the leaders in that. Our goal is to support the coalition work that's already being done by adding the voice of cities to that coalition.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Richard Conlon, president of the Seattle City Council. Our topic is the Seattle Farm Bill Principles and the Local Food Action Initiative. In addition to developing the Seattle Farm Bill principles, what have been some of the highlights in implementing the Local Food Action Initiative during the past year?
We've got a lot of great things that are going on. One of the things that was a highlight for me was several weeks ago when I had the opportunity to be at the opening of the Seattle Community Farm. And the Seattle Community Farm is at the Rainier Vista housing development. Rainier Vista is one of the rebuilt housing developments that Seattle Housing Authority has created. And it's a wonderful mixed-income community with lots of people who are refugees, immigrants from many different cultures. And one of the things that we wanted to do was to partner with Seattle Housing Authority to provide better nutrition and better food for the people in the area. So we helped them support and create the Seattle Community Farm. We did this in combination with an organization called Lettuce Link, which is a part of Solid Ground, one of our most recognized human service and community development organizations in the city. And so Solid Ground and Lettuce Link, they took the land, they've hired a farmer, and he is responsible for putting together this series of seeds and growing opportunities for people, and then engaging people in the community and working with them. And right now they've developed terraces, they've planted the crops. There's a children's learning garden where children can come out and learn about how to grow food, and then they're getting community members engaged and involved. There's a community group that's basically sponsoring and working with them on making this happen. And then by the end of the summer, even though it's been a tough summer for growing in Seattle, by the end of the summer, and I think, in fact, right about now, they're beginning to actually have some stuff harvested, and people are going to be able to benefit from that. And one of the neat things about it is, you know, when you talk about food, you're talking about lots of things, about economy and environment and so forth, but you're also talking about community. It's a wonderful community building activity. And so this is one more opportunity for people in the community to get to know each other, to work with each other, to live with each other, and to enjoy and appreciate that sense of community. So that's just an example of the kind of things that we're doing. We've got a couple of other community farms that are underway and in process. One is at the Atlantic Street Nursery down in southeast Seattle. So these are specific programs. In addition to that, this year we'll be opening a number of new Peapatch community gardens. And this is one of those extraordinary success stories that is really neat to be able to tell people as a way in which government actually works. So we wanted to develop new community gardens. And in 2008, when the people of Seattle were asked to renew the park levy, we included $2 million for community gardens as part of that. And we promised people we would develop 4 community gardens with that because we know land is expensive. And we thought we might have to purchase this land and develop it as community gardens. Well, since then, what we did was we asked our staff to go out on inventory and find city property or public property that potentially could be used for community gardens. And they went out and inventoried this and said, look, we don't actually have to buy very much. There are a couple of underserved communities where we couldn't find land when we may have to buy it. But right now, we've spent less than half of the money. And instead of 4 gardens, we're developing 13. And we're doing that because we're actually using unused city property. So it's a tremendous tribute to our city staff that they've been able to do this. And it's a great success story for the people of Seattle. Their money has been multiplied by many times beyond what we told them we'd be able to do.
What changes in regulations or city policy have been made to encourage local food?
We've done a lot in order to really help make local food growing possible. And I'll just give you an example of one of the things that we did. We found that there was this odd kind of regulation that people thought existed where they were not allowed to grow food in the planting strips in front of their houses. The planting strip is the area between the sidewalk and the street that is actually city property, so it is part of the right-of-way. And the Department of Transportation basically had been discouraging people from growing food there, and there had grown up this idea that, in fact, there was a city regulation saying you couldn't grow food in the planting strip. Well, for some people, that's an important place. I mean, they may not have big yards and they may not have a lot of space and they want to grow food there. And it's also a great place to be out, you know, working in the front of your house so that you can get to know your neighbors, and it's a great community building place. So we went and looked, and it turned out there was no law or regulation that prohibited people from growing food. So why was the Department of Transportation telling them that you couldn't grow food there? We talked to them, and it turns out they have an actual policy interest. And the policy concern they had was, if you have food growing in this planting strip, people may not be able to access the sidewalk, and if it grew too high, then there might be visibility problems, particularly at corners. So we negotiated with them, and basically the negotiation was, if you're going to be planting food, you can't plant anything that's more than, I think it's 3 feet high within 30 feet of an intersection. That seems pretty reasonable. For most people, they can manage that. And then if you're going to put something permanent, like a raised bed or a structure that might potentially block people's access, then the Department of Transportation will offer you free consulting help to make sure that that's designed and built in a way that is not going to be problematic. So it's a permit you have to get for that, but it's a free permit, and you get the consulting assistance in making sure it's designed properly. So that's an example of the kind of regulation that we've been able to change. Another example is for farmers markets. Farmers markets are often located on vacant property that may be very good for development, and they have to move. We've had 3 farmers markets that had to move this year. And what we did was we put a new regulation in place that essentially reduced the cost for relocating into city right-of-way by up to 90%, basically saying, if you need to move, we'll close a street for you, we'll find one that's going to work, and you will greatly reduce the fees so that that market will be able to continue.
Would you comment also on food carts and regulations regarding them?
Food carts are an interesting part of the potential for getting more healthier food in people's hands more quickly. And in some ways, somewhat peripheral, because food carts don't necessarily produce healthy food, but they can. And one of the things we wanted to do was to open up the opportunities for that to be possible. So the council has passed regulations that essentially make it more possible for food carts to be located in different places around the city. They are a great part of a lively urban scene, and so in that sense, it's very positive for us in terms of urban development. We also hope and think that they can contribute to a better and healthier food and certainly provide more access to food, and the food will tend to be less expensive. So we'll see how that works, but it is going to be an interesting experiment.
What are some of the key upcoming steps to implement the Food Action Initiative?
This year, one of the things that we're really trying to do is to take the Local Food Action Initiative to scale. And there are several places in which we're working to do that. One way is that the United Way has made health and nutrition and food one of its principal focuses for probably the next several years, recognizing the issues around low-income people. And so they have actually created a food and hunger and nutrition focus for United Way, and they're working very hard to try and integrate that into our human services programs. We have lots of great programs that are going around the city. The goal is to kind of say, let's take it to the next level and let's really get at the roots of hunger, the roots of malnutrition, the roots of people's problems, and use our human service dollars most wisely to do that. So that's one example. A second example is the Regional Food Policy Council. Last November, we inaugurated a Regional Food Policy Council, which is an official advisory group to our Puget Sound Regional Council, which is where the governments from our four counties come together to talk about policy and try and develop common themes and approaches to public policy. So the Regional Food Policy Council is kind of the first attempt to bring to that group of governments a ways in which food policy can inform the work that they're doing. And the Food Policy Council has representatives from all the different sectors who are engaged in food issues, the three county executives and local governments, people from labor unions, people from grocery stores, from small food processors, from farmers, and so forth, and social justice organizations, all coming together to find ways in which to design the food system most effectively from a local government level. What's neat about this regional approach is that, of course, City of Seattle, we can grow food for ourselves, and it's wonderful that we can, but we know we can't grow all the food that we need. But the rural areas in our four counties can supply a significant portion of the food that the urban area consumes. And so by making sure that we get out to these four counties and don't just try to develop this policy by ourselves, we actually are much better able to foster those urban-rural connections that are going to be so critical. And we eventually hope to be able to take this out on a statewide level. And there is a statewide food policy task force that Governor Gregoire has commissioned. And we want to make those rural-urban connections really work well so that the farmers in eastern Washington know that they have the kind of markets in the urban areas that will make them confident in what they can grow and what they can produce.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think the message I'd like to leave the listeners with is that we have the opportunity to really do transformational work in making the food system work for our health, for our environment, for our economy. Seattle Farm Bill Principles is a great way in which to get involved with that. SeattleFarmBillPrinciples.org is the website to go to if you'd like to sign on or get more details about them. And if you go to my website at seattle.gov/council/Conlon, then you can get information on all the other things we're doing in the Local Food Action Initiative. And we've just scratched the surface today. There's a whole lot of stuff going on. It's a great community endeavor, and it's wonderful to be able to partner with it.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Diane. It's great to be here.
You have just been listening to Richard Conlon, president of the Seattle City Council. For more information, check on the web at SeattleFarmBillPrinciples.org. Again, that's SeattleFarmBillPrinciples.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the Streaming Archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.